Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have food to spare? And here I am, starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired servants.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms round him and kissed him. The son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let us have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the elder son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The elder brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I have been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you killed the fattened calf for him.' 'My son,' the father said, 'you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.'" If you've got your Bibles, turn back to Luke 15. And we're going to be looking at the older brother. Everyone in the world is either an older or a younger brother, or an elder or a younger brother. Not quite sure of the correct grammar there. I'm going to go with older. I hope you're okay with that. Younger brothers don't like to conform. Younger brothers see the rules as restrictions that are just trying to keep them hemmed in. Older brothers, they like to do what is expected. Older brothers conform to the expectation of others. They know their place in the world, and they feel safe when the rules kind of mark out the boundaries around them. Everyone is either an older or a younger brother. I've always been an older brother, both physically, I'm the eldest of four, but in my mentality as well. And this was confirmed to me on this Friday through some really interesting dramatic events that happened around the church. Here's the story, here's what happened. It's Friday afternoon, and apparently some young men stole a car in Walthamstow. And they come charging down the A406, followed by the police, helicopter, everything. They abandon the car somewhere down there and try to escape up through the gardens of Grove Hill and, for some reason, up on top of the rooftop of Grove Hill Evangelical Church. A great escape plan, I'm sure you'll agree. I saw a couple of young men in my back garden, so I went out to shout at them. They jump over the fence, and one of them gets tackled by a police dog, which is not something you see every day. So that was interesting. But basically, all of them got caught, and it was really quite an interesting experience. All of us neighbours were all out and about, kind of watching on. Watercolour Art Club was happening, watching through the window as well. And this is it, really. These rebellious younger brothers being rounded up, and the kind of judgmental older brothers looking on. That was very much the kind of attitude and the conversation that we had. How dare these young thugs turn up in our neighbourhood? This is South Woodford. It's not what it used to be round here. Very much judgmental attitude from all of us looking on. Younger brothers and older brothers, which one are you? Actually, the thing about this parable here is that it doesn't matter which one you are. Because Jesus reveals in this parable here that both younger and older brothers are equally lost. Last week we looked at the lost son, the first one, the younger one that went off and rebelled. This time we're looking at the second son, the older one who stayed home. But Jesus has got two words for this older son. You're lost and you're welcome. You're lost and you're welcome. Let's have a look at the first one. You're lost. I mentioned to the kids, these set of parables really start with a very important situation that we have to bear in mind. At the start of chapter 15, we read, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering round to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.'" It's really this situation that sparks these parables. This is what it's all about. The younger son represents the tax collectors and the sinners gathering to Jesus. The older son represents these Pharisees with their judgmental attitude. And to them, Jesus is saying, you are just as lost as those tax collectors and sinners. Verse 25. "Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of his servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in." Jesus is saying to these Pharisees here, you're lost because you are far from God's heart. The Pharisees are kind of this, telling people off all the time, but God is this, always willing to welcome people in. This older brother has just reacted in this parable in a totally different way to God, how he would react. Just look how this contrast works itself out in when you look at all the parables together. The first one, the lost sheep. The shepherd finds his lost sheep. How does he respond? He rejoices. And we read that that rejoicing is reflected in heaven. In the second parable, the woman who's lost a coin rejoices with her friends when she finds that lost coin. And likewise, God rejoices with his angels when one sinner repents. And then we get to this parable, this son who's gone off and wasted his inheritance, has come back, he's found. The father celebrates, but the older son is angry, and he refuses to join the feast on principle. The Pharisees thought they were being godly by keeping sinners at bay, by being dismissive of these tax collectors and people that Jesus was so willing to eat with. But in doing so, they showed just how far they were from God's heart. God's heart is towards the lost. He's always longing for people to turn back to him, always ready to welcome people who turn around and repent. And maybe that's why all these tax collectors and sinners were so drawn to Jesus. In those first couple of verses there, Maybe that's why they were so drawn to Jesus. I think they could sense that here was someone who was genuinely on their side. Here was someone who was really for them. Sure, Jesus might tell them some challenging words about how they live their lives, but they could see here was someone who was unmistakably for them. Do you know that for yourself? That Jesus is unmistakably, genuinely for you. Unmistakably, genuinely on your side. And what about that question for us older brothers? Do we have God's heart for the lost? Are sinners drawn to you in the same way they're drawn to Jesus? Are sinners drawn to this church in the same way that they were drawn to Jesus in this story here? If not, why not? There's something a little amiss if all the people we attract are the kind of respectable, conformist, older brother types. Could that be indicative that at some level we do have this older brother attitude, this hidden Pharisaicism, this judgmental attitude towards others? I think we need to think about how we welcome people, how we receive people. In general, I think this church is really, really good at welcoming new people. I think there's certain ones among you who just are always there with a big smile, ready to talk to the new ones. It's great. But let's think for a moment. How would we react if a younger brother turned up? How would we react if someone turns up smelling of smoke, dressed very differently to how we tend to dress? How would we react when someone turns up who is obviously living a very different lifestyle to the one that we might call acceptable? Would we be just as welcoming to a younger brother as to an older brother? Let's take this warning. We don't want to be far from God's heart. We don't want to be like this older brother here. We don't want to be like these Pharisees. Let's pray that we would have God's heart towards sinners. That's the first reason that the older brother is lost. He's far from God's heart. The second reason that he's lost, it's because he's far from God's mercy. Let's continue reading how he responds to his father. But he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so that I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you killed the fattened calf for him." Jesus says to Pharisees, "You're lost because you are far from God's mercy." Note this interesting contrast. The younger son, as we looked at last week, ran from God's rules. However, I want to suggest that the older son had run from God's mercy. The older son had run from God's mercy. These verses reveal something twisted, something odd, something not quite right about this son's relationship with his father. He's talking about slaving for him. And he's talking about orders. You know, that's not a good relationship between a father and a son. It's more like a relationship between a boss and an employee. There's no mention of love there. I want to suggest that this son couldn't bear being at the mercy of his father. He couldn't comprehend being indebted to his father's grace. So the older son, it seems, sought to put his father in his debt. He would much rather earn his inheritance by slaving away through hard work rather than just being freely given it. There's no language of mercy here. It's all about what he can merit. Not mercy, merit. He's run away from his father's mercy. So actually, these words that he responds to his father are an accusation. Look, I held up my end of the bargain. Now give me what you owe me. I've done what I'm supposed to do in my contract that I've set up in our relationship. Why haven't you held up your end? It's all about merit. There's something really wrong with this relationship here. Might we be guilty of the same? Might you be guilty of the same? Do you pride yourself on being a strong-minded, independent, self-confident individual? Good for you. That sort of attitude does serve many people very well. That attitude might well get you very far in life. You might well get very good results in your exams. You might well get a very good degree from your university. You might well get a very good job. You might well progress up the career ladder, pushing others down as you climb it. You might well draw people to you and have a good circle of friends who are impressed by your confidence. You might well have a beautiful wife or husband. You might well get a lovely family. Self-confidence and this kind of independent spirit will serve you well to a point. But you will always be lost. You will always be lost. At some point in life, we have to recognize that we can't do this on our own. And we certainly can't earn our way to heaven on our own. We need God's help. We need God's mercy. Running away from God's mercy leads to a dreadful place in the end. Whether you're running away through wrongdoing, like the younger son, or whether you're running away through self-confidence, everyone ends up in the same place. Do you think you're okay because you're a good person? This warning is for you. If your hope for heaven is based on merit rather than mercy, you are this older son. None of us will ever earn our way to heaven. We will all fail. We will all be lost. We need God's mercy. This is the warning, the rebuke for older sons. You're lost. But secondly, Jesus says to these Pharisees, these older sons, you're welcome. Let's move on to the next slide. You're welcome because the Father reaches out. Let's continue reading. A couple of verses. So his father went out and pleaded with him. My son, the father said, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. Notice what the father does here. I love this. I think this is great. His son is really, really angry. And I don't know if you're like this, but when I'm around people that are angry, I get angry too. I get angry at their anger. That's not good. Don't do that. The father doesn't do that here. His son is angry. He won't come in. Maybe some of you parents can relate to this. Have you ever had like a big family meal, lots of cousins and aunties and uncles and grandparents all gathering together, and then one of your children has a bit of a tantrum? Something isn't fair. Something's not right. So they charge off to their room, and it's really awkward and tense at the table. You know, what are you going to do? Mum, Dad, who's going to go up and talk to them? Or do you just kind of leave it and pretend nothing's happened? Eventually, one of you decides that you're going to go up, and you hesitate as you're on the landing about to go into their room, because, let's face it, your child is an awful human being at the moment. And you don't really know what to say. How are you going to respond? Do you kind of go, get down here. You're going to ruin the whole day, you absolute idiot. That's probably not the right approach, is it? That's not what the father in the parable does either. He goes out to his son. He doesn't just send a servant. He goes himself. He doesn't go to give him a row. He goes to plead with him. This is actually kind of the same thing that he did with the younger brother, right? He went out. He got on the road. He ran and hugged him. Except here, the kid is just on the porch in a strop. But the father still comes out. He's not coming out with fists. He's not coming out with insults. He's coming out to plead gently with his child, with his son. And isn't that encouraging for religious people like us, for older brothers, for people who talk the talk but don't walk the walk, for hypocrites like you and me? God comes out with the same gentle mercy to people like you and me as he does for those younger sons. He comes out with gentle words, pleading that we would come back to him. Jesus died for sinners and for religious hypocrites. Isn't that good news? That's the first reason they're welcome. The second reason they're welcome, because Jesus doesn't finish the story. I find this really, really interesting. By the way, have you noticed that kind of interactive TV programs have become a thing? Maybe you haven't, maybe you have. There have been a few on Netflix recently where you can kind of sort of decide what happens in the story as you watch it. I don't really know how it works, but you can kind of press a button and the main character on TV makes a decision and goes off in a different direction. Bear Grylls, the survivalist, kind of has one at the moment where he's in a helicopter in the wilderness and you get to decide kind of, oh, should he take the parachute with him, or should he take the knife with him, or should he take the warm woolen blanket with him? And depending on what you choose, the TV program goes off in a different direction. You're kind of writing the story as you go, as a viewer. It's not new. I remember books growing up that had the same kind of premise. In primary school, reading a series called Goosebumps, which is this scary kind of story thing where you kind of get to the bottom of the page and then you have to make a decision. Should your character open the door or should he run away screaming? And depending on your decision, you go to a different page in the book and you end up with a different story depending on the decisions you make. It's an interactive story. And that's what Jesus is doing here. He leaves it unfinished. He leaves it for the Pharisees to write their own ending. This father has gone out to his son. He's gone out and he's told him that, look, you don't have to work for all this stuff. It's already there for you. Everything I have, it's yours. And how does the older son respond? Does he stay outside? Or does he come in and join the feast? We don't know. Jesus doesn't say. He leaves the story hanging because he wants these Pharisees to write the end of their own story. He wants them to respond. Pharisees, older brothers, are you going to stay out on the porch in your judgmental huff, saying things aren't fair, saying that I demand this because I've done this? Or will you just come in and join the feast? How does your story end? How does your story end? Are you still out there on the porch, trying to work your own way to heaven, with a judgmental attitude towards others? Or have you come in? Have you taken a seat at the table with Jesus? Along with the tax collectors, along with the sinners, have you come and sat down with Jesus and just made yourself at home? You are welcome. This is what we're going to finish with. You are welcome. Whether you're hearing that for the first time, or whether you're hearing that for the thousandth time, you are welcome. Jesus says that to you today. You are welcome. However many times you've failed, however far you have fallen, you are welcome. There is a place in heaven for you if you will only turn away from your sin and ask for forgiveness. And there is fellowship to be enjoyed with Christ now if you will turn away from your sin and ask for forgiveness. Time and time and time again, every single day, when you wake up, remind yourself that Jesus says, you are welcome. Whatever your failings this week, whatever your failings today, whatever my failings today, we are still welcome. Don't stay out on the porch. Older brothers, you are welcome.